being a female founder and trying to raise investment, like, there is a lot to get angry about.
Welcome to Series 3 of Greater Than 11%, a podcast whose aim is to educate, inspire, and demystify creative careers, all the meanwhile promoting some awesome women and non-binary folk. What a way to kick off Series 3 with two incredible creative beings, Samantha Hornsby and May Yip. Now, when I say incredible, let me elaborate. Sam and May go way back. They've been besties for 22 years. Both had very different career paths early on. Sam started out within media and tech, and May was working towards and achieved being an accountant. 7 years ago, they decided to pool their talents, skills, and their shared obsession of making career education within the creative industries better and redefining the traditional concept of creativity. As a result, Eric was born. The original offering has evolved over time, which I'm sure they will elaborate on once we get into the discussion. But currently you can find Eric in app form, and it is a hothouse of all the best career advice. Beneficial to all, but with a prime focus on providing 16 to 25-year-olds with little to no experience and who need help with their next career move, whether that be learning about what industry is right for them, discovering the latest career events, or finding a dream employer. If you don't know it already, you can easily download it whilst listening. It's an easy multitask. Sam and May, what a delight to welcome you and Eric to Greater Than 11% and the first episode of Series 3.
Thank you so much for having us.
That was amazing. You need to send me over that intro.
Happy to. I wonder if we can start off with you kind of talking a little bit more detail about Eric and kind of why you decided to set up on this adventure, and also how it's evolved as it is today, because it wasn't always in app form.
Yeah, so May and I go, like you said, way back. We met when we were at school, at primary school, and we were both really creative kids. So the entirety of our school career from then on basically was us just like exchanging ideas about being creative and all this. But then when it came to actually choosing our career options, that creative, I guess, aspiration was just stamped out of both of us. And the career advice, the career education that we got was very much like the opposite of what we actually really wanted. So May ended up being a chartered accountant. I ended up working in, yeah, like media and then a bit of tech. I was a bit directionless. I didn't go to uni. I had no idea what I was doing. And so Eric was born out of that experience, basically. We later on in life realised that lots of young people were still experiencing the same problems that we had when we were at school. And so, yeah, we decided to do something about it. And Eric, in its first format, because you are absolutely right, Eric has kind of, the mission has always stayed the same, which is basically to give young people better career advice, specifically around the creative industries. But the vehicle in which we communicate that mission has changed over time, depending on, you know, I guess what the landscape is, what's working, and whether there's a pandemic or not. You know, that's been a big factor. So originally it was career fairs. We were kind of, when we first had this idea for, you know, like stopping young people from falling into the same traps that we did, we looked around at what was out there in terms of career education and we were like, career fairs are really boring. Like, we could definitely do a better job there. And so that was Eric in its first format. We redesigned career fairs. We made them about the creative industries. We made them like super experiential. That's a word, isn't it? Yeah. Very like tactile, very exciting, very reflective of the creative industries that we were trying to communicate. But then obviously because of the pandemic hit, we had to stop the events. And that's when we came up with the idea for Eric in its current format, which is the Eric app.
Amazing. I'm really curious as to why you think your careers advice was pushing you away from creative, especially when you said you were both really creative. And I have visions of you as like now small children, like making amazing creative things. What, and also that you were both kind of guided away from that. Any thoughts as to why that happened?
Well, for me personally, I think it was definitely my family and my parents. Coming from like an Asian family, my only real options were doctor, lawyer, accountant. And I was also quite good at math. I think when you were younger, it is really kind of, you are defined by what you're good at subject wise. And even though I did do art, it was just never really taken that seriously. Do you know what I mean? And I think definitely because I was good at math, teachers, my parents were like, oh, you know, accountancy, like that kind of was the obvious choice. I guess I never felt like there was a moment for me to even think about it. It was just like, I was kind of pushed towards it. And then I looked back and I, you know, suddenly done a degree in accountancy, gone to uni, and now I'm working at PwC. But so I don't think ever there's a moment where you get to step back and actually think about it for yourself to be like, this decision actually is a very important decision. I think I just let other people make that decision for me.
Mm. And it is hard with those pressures, right? Societal, family, all that kind of stuff. Like, I've definitely had a very like wiggly career path trying to find out what I wanted to do as well. I mean, that's part of the reason why I started Greater Than 10% as well. But like you guys, it's trying to get that information out there and more accessible. I'm wondering if you can talk about individually those early career paths, like what you did, and then kind of that point where you were like, okay, we need to pool our talents and our skills. We need to come together. I mean, we're best friends. We may as well hang out all the time and create something together. So like what was the lead up for you both kind of working? You know, May, you said you graduated as an accountant and were working at PwC. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious as to kind of what was happening up until that moment where you did come together.
Yeah, so I went to Newcastle Uni and studied there. And Sam, like she said, she didn't go to uni, so went straight into London. And I think Sam was like waiting for me to finish uni.
Like, weren't you? Hurry up, May. Get rid of this awful career.
So I finally moved to London with PwC, which is one of like the biggest accountancy firms. And Sam and I would like, yeah, meet up for coffees and like, you know, just meet up on the weekends. But I actually had a blog on the side at uni because obviously I think I was clearly not getting my creativity through what I was doing. So I remember I created a blog. At the time, I think it was like a Tumblr blog or something like that. And it was like outfits. Like I picked out clothes from online and then would put together outfits. And then I think we just kind of, I guess, yeah, we'd meet up and just kind of talk about things. And then Sam kind of joined in on the blog, but the blog kind of changed in a different format. And I think it just naturally then ended up being like, we want to know how other people got their jobs because we weren't in jobs that we were happy with. So we were like, we'd love to just interview like random people who have really cool jobs. And we used to both do that at our lunch break. I remember one day I interviewed a graffiti artist in my lunch break at PwC. I mean, I only had like an hour because they were very strict. They were like, and I went all the way to Shoreditch to interview this graffiti artist, came back, and then we would write up these interviews and put them on a blog. No one was reading them.
But you were getting your creative outlet, right? That's part of it, I imagine. Yeah. I mean, it's always nice when someone reads it, right? But yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But like, I think it would just prove that we just loved it, didn't we, Sam? We just would like meet up, honestly, on the weekends. We would be writing these blog magazine things. We would like meet up, you know, after work. And I think we would, you know, when you're just so passionate about something that you would just do it regardless, and that's all you think about, and you would just, you know, that I just remember that so well. Like I would look forward, you know, to my lunch break, to after work, to just continue with this project that no one knew about.
What about you, Sam, in terms of up until that point where you joined forces on the blog?
Yeah, oh my gosh. And my, you know, my whole life had been leading up to this moment where May finally meets the same city as me. I was over the moon. I definitely, yeah, like that blog was amazing. That was definitely like the trigger. And actually, weirdly, we're still kind of doing that. Do you know what I mean? Except we're just not doing the interviewing ourselves. We're enabling other people to basically create that content and then like get it in front of young people that are looking for that content. So like, it is insane, but that mission that we started out like doing, that must have been 10 years ago. That is still the mission that we are doing today. Like, we're going to flog that horse till it dies, you know? And I do remember, I just remember just being like, I can't believe that people will be willing to tell us their career stories as well. You know, we would like reach out to these random people that we just like found online somewhere or read about in a news article. And all these people would be like, yeah, I'd love to share my career story. And I do think at that moment we were like, there is something here. Like there is absolutely like, you know, like these people are willing to tell people and we need to share what they are saying. So yeah, it was the spark of like basically the rest of our lives. So it's great.
And you've still got so much to go, Sam.
I know. And we're only 21, obviously. So.
It's like we've just scratched the surface. That's how it feels.
So what was the, what was that tipping point where you were like, this is what, we're going to leave everything else we're doing and we're going to basically focus on this and make something together to help other people?
Yeah. So like, I do think that was like a really pivotal moment. I had been working at startups for like the whole of my career, basically, because they were the only people that would take me. Like I tried applying to big companies, but they were like, no, we're not interested in you. And I found my people with the startup culture. And everyone in the startup world has quit their jobs and, you know, done something really like crazy or whatever. And so I was surrounded by people who were doing what I wanted May and I to do. And so I basically ground May down until she was like, okay, fine, I'm ready to quit my job. The tipping moment actually was, I think May was definitely like into the idea. It was definitely a case of like, May was battling a lot of, you know, like messaging, you know, coming from like, I think your family, but also the environment you were working in, you know, like everyone was very anti-risk as an accountant. Do you know what I mean? May's environment is essentially the antithesis of what like we wanted to do. And so poor May was like, you know, an uphill swim or uphill struggle. But then I got made redundant from my job and I was like, May, now's the time. I was like, I've got a bit of cash that will keep us afloat for like 2 months, like not long. But I was like, let's do it.
That was the time. Honestly, I think it was a sign. It was the sign that we needed to be like, this is the time to do it. Because we had been thinking about it. It wasn't like a week thing. Yeah, we'd been thinking for it for months. And yeah, I think when Sam got made redundant, it was like a blessing in disguise, essentially.
The change is great, you know, like, and if you're forced into change, you have to take advantage of that and see it as an opportunity rather than a negative.
Exactly.
So, yeah. But it was a lot easier to do, I think, with both of us. I think it would have been really hard for like either one of us to go and start a business by ourselves. The fact that we had each other was like amazing.
I did actually remember I bought this book called like Corporate Unlocked or something like that. And it was basically this.
Sounds riveting.
It was this book on like, literally taking the risk and leaving corporate life. And it was amazing. It was just like, sentences like you know, like take the risk now, like, you know, corporate life is boring. Like it was just this motivational book. Whoever wrote it is incredible, because like, I read that, I was like, okay.
How was your family? Because you talked about like the pressures of being guided down a certain career path, which you then did, and then I imagine you were fairly successful in it. And then I wonder, you know, like, how was that when you were like to your family, like, okay, yep, I've studied, I'm in this big company, PwC, I've just read Corporate Unlocked and I'm out of here. How was that?
So actually, like around that time, my mum had actually like passed away from cancer. So it was a big change. But I think, again, I needed that realization to be like, okay, life is so short. What am I doing? You know, like, why am I not taking risks? If I'm not happy, I need to change it. And my dad actually changed a lot from that moment, I think, in a positive way. I think he then realized that there was more to life. So when I went to him, I think I was surprised by his reaction, because he was definitely, you know, supportive with that. I think he obviously was also like, okay, you've done your exams and you've got the certificate and stuff like that, the qualifications. Yeah. So he knew that I had this backup just in case.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry to hear about your mum, but I'm it's lovely to hear that it was something that also sparked you to do something that you really wanted to do as well.
No, exactly.
I noticed on both of your LinkedIns that you had founded LY London. I'm wondering if you can talk about how that came together and what that meant from going from being an employee to becoming a co-founder and entrepreneurs.
So when we quit our jobs, you know, we had this idea that we wanted to, in fact, actually, we were like, the magazine is going to be huge. we're going to be media moguls. And then about, you know, after about 2 months, we were like, we've run out of money. And we were like, this hasn't gone to plan. So basically, we were like, what do we do? Because we hadn't come up with the name, Eric, and we hadn't really come up with this concept. Like, or we had definitely hadn't come up with the concept of the careers fair. So there wasn't really like a solid business model there where we were like, this is how we can make money. So May and I were like, okay, it's coming to like D-Day. We've got to come up with some sort of bread and butter. And so basically, we came up with the idea for a video production company. And actually, the reason that we did that is because I had actually had some video production experience in my previous job where I was doing media. I was part of like the media comms team. And so, yeah, so we went and got a couple of cameras and a couple of tripods. And then we were like, let's give it a go. And the first video that we made was awful, so bad, that the people asked for their money back.
Oh no, it's like something on The Apprentice. Don't
oh God, literally, like that is the vibe. That is the vibe. It was like, here's a brief, and we were like, sure. And then just like, we'd feel our way in the dark. And eventually, after like, we ran LY Production, and LY London is actually named after May's mum. So it is actually a business that was like really close to our hearts, and it means a lot to us. And it was essentially like the start of our creativity, which is amazing, and it was the best gift ever. We did end up becoming really good at video production, you know, the 10,000 hour rule. So that's what happened with LY Production. But then eventually Eric, basically, we started Eric about halfway through we're running LY Productions, and then Eric took over, and then eventually we basically had to shut down LY because we literally didn't have enough time. So it was our bread and butter for like 3-4 years.
I was just going to say, because I think some people might think like, oh, that's amazing that you guys have those skills, but we didn't have any skills. And then we taught ourselves how to edit on YouTube. I mean, I hadn't even picked up a camera. But by the end of it, like, you know, we were working for some pretty big clients like EDF Energy. I can't think of any more, but I think it was amazing because it just shows that, you know, you can teach yourself skills as well. Like, you don't have to go and spend, you know, thousands of pounds on a course. There's so many different ways, if you are a creative person, to have a side hustle and make a bit of money with your skills.
Yeah, I totally think that. When you were talking about that, I just think creative people always find a way, right?
Yeah.
But I also like, you're like risk averse. Like, star production company, I've never even picked up a camera. I like that you went from one extreme to the other. I love it.
You have to when you have zero money in the bank.
Yeah, true. I mean, that is such a good motivator, isn't it? Like paying the bills as well. It's like, you've got to get on with it. You can't be like, I can't do this. I've got to get on with it. But yeah, I mean, I took the piss out of Corporate Unlocked, but more and more I'm wanting to read it, May. You sold it to me. Amazing. So obviously you're still both on your career journey, but you're also both very clearly determined to shape what you do whilst contributing to bringing about change. So it'd be great to hear from you both about what have been some of the most challenging things you've encountered as you shaped, you know, LY London and then moving into Eric. I know you were just touching upon like starting up something and never having worked in it and having to kind of teach yourself skills, but I think like founders and people with side hustles, there's all of these things that come up that you're like, oh, I'd never even thought of that. So I'd love to kind of hear some of your experiences.
I imagine that May might want to chat about investment and how difficult that has been, because that if people are thinking about starting up a business and raising, that is hard. But May is the best person to talk to about that. I think for me, I could definitely like, I think May and I, as business partners, if you are planning on running a business or starting up something with a business partner, there are a myriad of things that you need to navigate, essentially, when it comes to your relationship and defining boundaries and things like that, that I think May and I, as close as we have always been, that was hard to like break through those barriers to begin with, because you essentially have to transition from friends where like you don't really have to talk about difficult problems. What you do with your life doesn't really impact them. Like when you run a business together, like those rules go out the window and everything that you do does impact that other person. And every time you don't agree on something, like you do have to have a difficult conversation. It doesn't have to be an argument, but you have to face a confrontation that you don't have to do when you are just friends. Because we think that actually more business partners should really talk about how difficult it is. You know, like the number of times that you hear about business partners falling out and then having an absolute disaster with the business. And, you know, the repercussions of that are awful. So I think that everyone should go in with their eyes wide open, and basically communication is everything. You're basically going into a marriage with someone else. That's essentially how I would define it. And if you don't communicate with each other, then you will end up having small things building up, and you'll end up really, I guess, not making the right decisions for each other or for the business. You end up, I guess, kind of everything gets a little bit resentful, a little bit biased, a little bit petty. And May and I are now, like, I think, like, absolutely, we're smashing it in terms of communication. And we've never been, you know, like, better friends. And I feel like May and I have kind of, I think it was probably about, it took about 3 years, 4 years to cross that boundary. But as soon as we did it, and as soon as we started communicating more effectively, and I guess looking at our own behavior and being like, okay, yeah, if I am feeling like this, how can I make it better? And how can I stop feeling like this in the future? And I guess working on our own behaviors, that's when the wall started to come down and everyone was like, oh my God, this is so much nicer. Yeah. We should really just exist more happily together. But yeah, I think that is the biggest challenge, I think, when you're working with a friend, is just getting through those barriers, which takes a while and it takes work.
I feel like that is literally what people would climb a high mountain to a guru to discover something. Like that is, but it's so true. And it's that emotional intelligence to go, what's my shit here, actually? And how can I deal with that and move on and make sure, like you said, for the business, for our friendship. So yeah, I love that.
I think the whole investment thing stems from the startup culture, because there is just, when you start a business, you know, what you see and read on like Twitter, on LinkedIn, on like all of these channels, I actually think it should be like criminal, because you go in and you're just comparing yourself to everyone else. You think that there's a certain way that you need to act, behave. You think you need to be raising £1 million, all of this like startup culture. And it's just a really negative environment. And especially, yeah, when we tried to raise investment, I think that was when we realized how toxic it was. And it really took us, you know, we went through a long journey of, it was difficult. I think actually it was probably one of the most difficult things that we've gone through. So yeah, I can say a lot, there's a lot to say about the startup culture, but essentially it is all just smoke and mirrors. No one knows what they're doing. Everyone's just trying to wing it. That's basically it. That's all you need to know. So no, there's no one out there who's better than you. There's no one out there who knows more than you. Do you know what I mean? But I think when we started pitching, it's just a really bizarre concept, because you're essentially trying to convince someone else of an idea that no one has, you know, there's no guarantee that it's going to go right or wrong. No one ever guaranteed that Uber was going to be, you know, the biggest company in the world. Like, it's just someone, you're just convincing someone of a vision, of an idea. And if you're not good at that, or if you can't do that, you're just getting rejected. And you're getting rejected over and over again in a very short period of time on an idea that you've spent, you know, 5 years on, like tears, sweat, everything. So I think it's just like a weird concept, isn't it? But once we kind of understood the game, because I do think it is a game, it turned everything around and it just helped us. I think it's like it shifted our mindset on how we look at things and how we look, especially with investment. And I think ultimately it was just not taking it personally. And I think as females, especially because we're both female founders, I think just naturally we're more empathetic and emotional and yeah, I think I personally, it took me a while to not take things seriously, and because it did knock confidence as well. So just to build that confidence up again and be like, you know what, like, we know our business so well, no one can say anything, like, they have their own opinion. Yeah, I think we've left it stronger, but it was emotional roller coaster.
Absolutely. And I do think being a female founder and trying to raise investment, like, there is a lot to get angry about. Like, stats don't lie, and 2% of funding goes to female founders. Like, that is a stat that has been around, and it has been consistent every single year they do the research. That has happened for the last, like, 3 years. And so, like, yeah, there's a lot to be angry about, and it's hard not to be angry when you're trying to raise investment and you are getting rejected time and time and time again because we're not behaving like men. Like, and that is a hard pill to swallow every time. And so, yeah, like, that is, I'd say, oh God, I've got, like, PTSD. That's how, like, weak I am, but, like, I've got PTSD for trying to raise investment.
No, it's not weak. I mean, it is stressful, right? Especially when you know you're going in and the bias is stacked against you, right? Like, and then you have to try and sell yourself. Like, that's exhausting.
Yeah.
I love that you said, like, once you realise the game, that kind of took a load of pressure off or unlocked something for you both.
Well, we came out stronger. We've learned loads of lessons. We should write a book.
Yeah, exactly.
Investment unlocked.
I love it. All right. So you both actively work at providing and educating and supporting creative careers, you know, through Eric, and I feel like you live and breathe it. What is some of the best advice you've heard kind of in relation to a creative career and taken on board?
I think for me, and it actually weirdly goes back to what May was just saying about investment slightly, but I think when you're in the creative world, like, it's a very, I guess, kind of visual world where, you know, lots of it is on social media, lots of it is images, lots of it is text, lots of it is all this stuff where, like, you know, people are talking about things that they've done and projects that they've done and blah, 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 which is amazing. But I think often you can feel like you're underachieving. It's not imposter syndrome. It's like comparison syndrome. That's how I'd call it. And I think it is sometimes very difficult not to get sucked into that thing of being like, oh, I'm not doing enough. I'm not doing enough. I need to do more. I need to do more. But actually, I think, like, for us, like, the best advice that we've ever, well, that I've ever received is, like, just creating your own definition of success, which is such a simple concept, but, like, really hard to do, I think. It's taken me years to just be like, I can now look at social media, see all these amazing things that people are doing and be like, that is amazing. Like, I love that. And I am like, I want to lift that up without having this thing of being like, but maybe I should do more, because I'm like, you know what? I'm really bloody happy. Like, I have the luxury of being able to do what I want whenever I want. And that is one of the benefits of being a creative often, is that it is a freelance based, you know, space sector. And so you do have these amazing, like, everyday benefits that often get overlooked, I think. So for me, the advice, redefining success for you, like, what does success mean for you? What makes you happy? And then just, like, living your life and doing your career in line with that rather than what everything else in society is telling you. That has been game changing for me.
Yeah, I would definitely say I've been on that pathway. I feel like I'm still on it. But yeah, it took me a long while to figure out, like, you've got to be happy with what you're doing. You can't keep setting the benchmark higher and higher because you're looking at other people and thinking, wow, how did they do that? You know, that's where I want to get. In a real, like, admiring way, not necessarily a jealous or envious way, but yeah. And it definitely unlocked a lot for me as well when I kind of figured out, like, hold on, it's your life.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that also for you, May? Or have you got something from Corporate Unlocked?
Yeah, 100%. No, no, definitely. Well, I say, like, because we're in the career education space, I think people forget to do that education piece. So I think researching is just so important. And I think we should encourage, you know, young creators to do the research first. I know that sometimes, you know, when you are looking for your first job, you obviously want to start working. You apply to every single job that you can see. But I just don't think that that's the right attitude, because the employers can tell that you're just applying for everything. You know what I mean? And they are just looking for the person who just puts a little sentence there or goes over and beyond to just say, like, why do they really want to work in that company or in that industry? So I think it's like, slow down a little bit, do the research, really understand what the options are, and then make a decision based on all of the information that you have. Because I think it will just help you be more focused and more clear on what you want to do. Even if you get there and do the job or whatever it is and you don't like it, I think that's also good, because then you can tick that off and be like, okay, that wasn't for me. But I think at the moment, like, we put so much pressure on young people to, like, get a job, like, start work, you know, why are you unemployed? All of this stuff. They feel the pressure too. But it's not quite working, because employers aren't saying yes, because they're getting so many different, like, CVs, and you're just getting frustrated because you've had like 10 no's.
Yeah, I think that's so important. Like, I totally believe in that. I think just thinking about what you want to do and, like, focusing all your energy on that just makes so much sense, rather than, like, that scattergun of just go everywhere. Like, that is, like, the most craziest advice, isn't it? Just apply everywhere. I never say that to my students. I'm like, really think about what you want to do. And then focus that.
No, exactly. And I've got so much energy as well. Plug Eric, but I think there are now lots of different companies and brands who are in that space to help you do that. And I think back in our day, we didn't have those resources or you know, people to help. It was only our parents and, you know, teachers. So I'm hoping that in the future, it will just be easier to do that research, because you'll have all these tools and resources in place.
Both of you are, like, highly creative. I would love to hear from both of you, like, what you love about what you do.
Oh God, so many things. Being able to work with May, best thing in the world. I think freedom of time, unparalleled. Like, that is what so many people work towards for their whole lives to be able to get, and we've got it now. And I think for me, that is just, like, I feel like the luckiest person in the world. I really do. We don't get paid a lot, but we do get to do, like, within reason, what we want whenever we want, which is amazing.
I think what I love is how much we learn and how much we do every day. Because every day, I know people always say every day is not the same, but, like, genuinely, when you're running a business, you have no idea what you're doing the next day or what is around the corner. So it's very stimulating. I've never been bored of what I do. It's just, you're learning all the time, and, like, you have to think on the spot sometimes. I think when we did events, that definitely helped, because Sam and I always say, like, on the day of an event, something goes wrong. You know, I think one time, like, the ceiling fell down or something. Like, it was like extreme. you can be so prepared, but something's gonna, and you can't just, and so some of the volunteers that we have, obviously they were, like, young students, and it was their first, you know, time working at an event, and they'd be like running to us and be like, oh my God, you know, something's gone wrong. And then I was like, well, what are we going to do about it, you know, because we have to do something. What are we going to do, just close down the event or, like, tell everyone to leave? So I was like, you have to come up with a solution.
This is also, like, so funny, because this is the events and panicking during events, like, for whatever crisis, whatever fire there was to fight, was exactly the moment where, like, May and I, our different personalities would come out, because I would be like, let's shut down the event. I'm like, that's it. Oh God, everyone get out. I'm such a panicker. And May is literally like, okay, guys, what's the solution? And it's like the juxtaposition of our personality types. Like, you couldn't make it up. One time where I cancelled all of the performances. Do you remember that, May? Because I thought there was a problem with the mic.
No.
But there wasn't. There wasn't a problem with the mic.
Yeah.
And I sent everyone home.
Oh my God. I love how much you laugh at that as well. It's like, yeah, send home.
It's ridiculous. It was ridiculous. What a reaction.
But what great two types of personalities, like, to have together. Like, that must work so well, right? It's like, you...
Yeah.
The energy, yeah, and the calm, no, and yeah, yeah, amazing. Cool. So how do you both fuel your creativity and your creativity to really, like, make Eric as brilliant as it is?
Well, I was going to say that, like, it's funny because I think actually we both thought that creativity meant the same definition, but I think we realized that creativity is so broad. Everyone is creative in their own way. And I actually think Sam and I's creativity is very different, which is, again, so great because it complements each other. So I'm I love like design and branding. So I love doing anything to do with like marketing materials, you know, the logo, all of that kind of stuff. Whereas Sam is like so innovative in terms of like ideas. So she comes up with like these incredible ideas, you know, especially when we were doing the events. Like she really kind of like was so good at just thinking innovatively, but that wasn't really my advantage. My advantage was more look and design and branding. So I guess you could both call that creativity, but we both were able to explore the areas that we really enjoyed.
So this is a question that I've asked everyone that I've interviewed, and I think it's really not ironic, but quite cute that it's kind of how you guys started out. So I always ask, like, is there a job in the creative industries you know nothing about and that you'd like to learn more about? So then I could get that person on to talk about it. So, yeah. So I feel like we've come full circle here a little bit. Back to your blog.
And actually, no, you were so right. And it comes back to the advice that we said about people getting into, like, how, you know, advice to get into the creative industries. There are so many jobs. There are so many industries we didn't even realise that there are.
It's
like
true.
We're still, again, learning of like jobs that we didn't even realise exist. And like it's just mind blowing that people do not have that information at like 16 when you're meant to be deciding what you want to do.
Definitely. I mean, that is part of the problem, I think. And that's why I think we've got a lack of diversity, right? Because we seem to, the people that are in the know are a certain type of person. And so they have very strong creative careers, whereas, you know, we're kind of playing catch up at the moment in terms of the more diverse side of things. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like you may know every creative job out there, but is there any that you've always been like, what do they do?
I know mine. Mine, I've always said it, that the VFX industry, I love to work in the VFX industry. So that's like a visual effects and animation. And I think you kind of, when you think about it, you think of like gaming or like cartoons and stuff, but like every single film now and TV show uses visual effects, and it's not that, you know, like bad visual effects anymore. Like it's like insane visual effects. And we actually did an event with a company called Framestore. They're one of like the largest VFX companies. And we really got to understand like all of the different departments, and it was just so fascinating.
Although I have to say, bad, you know, effects, I kind of have a special place in my heart as well. Because sometimes they're so bad, they're good, right?
Oh my God, 100%. 100%, yeah. I agree.
Sam, anything you're curious about that you've like come across in your kind of creative travels that you're like, what the hell does that person do?
I think there's quite a lot of them. Like I find like incredible niches fascinating. Like I remember ages ago we went to a warehouse in Essex where there is a guy there who chromifies awards for awards. Like that is the niche.
No, he chromified anything. It was literally any. You can send any object.
What an incredible niche. Do you know what I mean? Like Foley artists always fascinate me. Like, just in case anyone doesn't know, they're like the people that create sound effects for like radio and stuff like that. Like I love those like obsessive niches, because you can go even more. Like there is a Foley artist that I listened to a podcast about where he's specific about like nature noises. And like imagine crafting out that niche. And like that for me, I'm like, every time I hear about something like that, I'm like, oh God, I want to know more, you know.
That's amazing. Well, I think I can't remember what episode it was. I want to say maybe 85 or 86 even, but we interviewed a Foley artist, Louise Brown.
Oh, I've got to listen.
Yeah. And she's really into it. So she talks a lot. So she did a lot of the sound effects for Sex Education. So she talks she talks about that. So maybe you'll really like that episode.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm gonna listen to that immediately after this.
I'm really curious. Eric obviously is in app form at the moment, but lockdown, we're kind of easing out of that. Are festivals back on the table? I want to hear what the goss is for the future of where you're heading and what's going on.
No.
Yeah, we did.
We actually did speak about that today, didn't we, Sam? But there's like two areas that we really, I guess, obviously we're interested in giving access, you know, young people with amazing career advice. So yes, our dream would be to do a huge festival, and we're talking like 2-day camping, you know, like having some insane headline artists. So essentially music festival slash career
festival.
Love
that idea.
But yeah, we'd love to do that one.
Sorry,
one
I just
day.
Got too excited. I just completely spoke over you. That sounds amazing. How great would it be to have that as well and just hang out and talk careers and
I think we did mention like Beyonce.
May mention Beyonce. It was like Beyonce can headline.
But we were saying that, like, you know, we do obviously we'll have to pay
I think Beyonce would do it out of generosity of
her heart. Yeah, exactly. We're hoping that these, you know, these like artists will be like, you know what, I want to give back and like share their career story too. So how amazing would that be to like listen to performance, but then also meet their team behind the performance, or like find out what their career journey was. That's actually
you heard it here first. I'm greater than 11%.
Like actually,
oh my god, I love that idea. Definitely, I would totally love that. And I just think, and also not necessarily even young people, like people that want to change careers, people are just like both of you, like and me as well. I'm like, how did that person get to where they are? What have they done? Like, and I'm so interested in people's like creative journeys. Like, I just think it's fascinating kind of the routes people take and how, where they end up. So when can we expect Eric Festival. Beyonce Festival?
Well, I don't know.
It's in the making.
Exactly. No pressure. We're in ideation stage.
Sign up to our newsletter and you might find out.
Yeah, download the app.
Yeah, there'll be an answer.
So something I ask everyone before wrapping up, is there a woman or a person who identifies as non-binary within the creative industries that you would recommend I get in touch to interview on Greater Than 11%?
Well, it's actually really weird that May mentioned the
Beyonce
industry. And, no.
Yeah, just pass over her details and I'll definitely reach out.
Imagine. Who's got lined up here today? Oh,
what I would love is then selling her your idea and be like, guys, she's in.
She's in. Yeah. Oh my god, imagine. I feel like we're gonna have to do this now. May mentioned a brainstorm earlier, because I actually, when you asked us, you know, I don't know if it's a surprise, but Renee asked us to she sent us a list of potential questions she might ask, and this was one of them. And so I had a good think about who we could do. And actually, I did put down Amy, because I think she is a pioneering woman in the VFX industry. And she's so passionate about getting more young people and like creatives to like learn about VFX and animation as an industry, because it is consistently got, I guess, being overlooked. And also, there aren't that many women in it. And so I think Framestore is, you know, like, or Amy is absolutely someone who is pioneering women in the VFX and animation industry. And I think she would be amazing.
Cool. I would love to reach out to her. What's her full name? Amy?
Amy Smith.
We can do the introduction if you want. But she is honestly, And I think the VFX industry is going to be one of the fastest growing. It's not going away. It's only getting bigger.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, well, sounds great. I look forward to it. Guys, it's been so lovely catching up with you, learning a bit more about your careers, but also talking more about Eric, which is such a fabulous tool for any creative, I feel, that just kind of wants to think about different pathways or CVs or whatever it may be. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening. Please do subscribe to where you get your podcasts to make sure you're up to date with any new episode drops. And you can also follow us on Instagram, @greaterthan11. A huge thank you to Eden Richards, who creates all Greater Than 11%'s artwork and edits this beautiful podcast.